This is Sportsline on WRMJ.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
614-0-RUN in Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
And by office specialists in Galesburg and Advanced Business Systems in Moline, your headquarters for office supplies, computer sales, and service, phone systems, sharp copiers, promotional materials, and more.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge!
Now, from the WRMJ studios in downtown Aledo, here's Jim Taylor with Sportsline.
All right, is the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning. Started doing this back in 1979. We're winding down the 2023-2024 school year. I know there's some tournament games, this end-of-the-season tournament they have hosted by Rockridge with a lot of great teams there. I know one of the premier games was yesterday where Kendra Lewis pitched a no-hitter against a very good West Central team. 1-0. I know the Three Rivers Conference track meet on the boys' side last night. We're going to talk some girls' track today. We got a number of local state qualifiers heading to Eastern Illinois University, the Big Blue Oval, they say, at O'Brien Field, beginning next Thursday. And then, of course, the boys' track sectionals taking place. I don't know if they're Wednesday or Thursday next week. And, of course, our postseason coverage starts Monday with high school baseball, Mercer County on the road at Monmouth Roseville. There were some wild results. What does it mean with the wild results kind of we saw in softball yesterday?
Well, yeah, you see, like you mentioned over at that Rockridge softball spring classic we do every year, it's always a great, I feel like, tune-up for some of those teams getting to the going into the postseason. You mentioned Kendra Lewis no-hitting West Central. Rockridge beat them 1-0. Rockridge later in the day beat Macomb, who's had a solid season, 4-1, and Sherrard yesterday went 2-0, a win over Macomb, 17-0 for the Tigers, and then they also beat Pearl City 10-0. Kind of another interesting result yesterday, Riverdale beat Ridgewood, who's had a great year, 17-4. So Riverdale, they won a regional last year in softball. They beat Sherrard in the regional championship game last year. That's a potential regional title rematch this year, so they're kind of clicking at the right time. They split with Sherrard a couple of weeks ago, a 13-run win over Ridgewood last night as part of that event. And then West Central did bounce back after losing to Rockridge and beat UT 5-1. Some of the games today, they actually get underway at 9:30 today. Again, those games are played in Muscatine. Rockridge plays Normal Community West and Mantino today. Sherrard plays UT, and then they play St. Bede, who won the 1A state title a year ago. That's a potential sectional semifinal preview, Sherrard and St. Bede. And then Ridgewood also has a game against St. Bede today over there as well.
St. Bede's 2A this year then?
Yep. They'd be in the same sectional.
So is the softball, who won the, is it official with who won the LTC softball?
Well, there's some, I was told last night there's some controversy surrounding that. So West Central swept Ridgewood this week and has played their full conference schedule and went 18-2. Knoxville has two conference losses entering today. They have a doubleheader. They're actually playing in Aledo against Mercer County today. And they have two losses entering today, but they were not able to get all of their conference games rescheduled. So they, you know, theoretically, if they sweep Mercer County today, could end with two conference losses, but wouldn't have the same winning win total. So there's been, like, I guess, some contention about whether they'd share it or not, and I believe the decision is no, because they wouldn't be 18-2, they'd be 15 or 16. And 2 and whatever. So, and I believe there's like, and I heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, that like Roval Williamsfield wouldn't reschedule with them, and those are the games they need to get.
Well, that'd be weird. What they should have done, they should have played the doubleheader today here in Aledo, and then turned around and had Roval Williamsfield come over here and have to play the two more games. But I mean, playing four games in one day with a small roster of high school softball. That's interesting that there's gone. But, I mean, you're...
When you have to get 20 conference games right. in the spring, and I mean, it's hard to do. It's hard to do.
So, well, and then, I mean, to be quite honest, Mercer County could make that all for naught.
If they win one of the games today.
So, what time is that game? That
starts at 11.
Because Knoxville's had a good year. That's a nice tune-up for Mercer County softball. Yep. When do the Eagles open up postseason playing softball?
Wednesday.
And they'll play?
Brimfield Elmwood in WRMJ broadcast.
Which will be no slouch. They have good legacy, good tradition in softball at
Brimfield
Elmwood.
And Knoxville, like you said, they're the 3 seed in the subsectional. So Sherrard, you know, if they get there, could potentially play Knoxville in the regional championship along with maybe Riverdale will be the other potential matchup. Sherrard will play either Orion or Kewaunee Tuesday to open postseason play in softball. And Tigers actually lost a game to Kewaunee a month or so ago. So, we were talking off the air before we started, both softball regionals we'll be covering, I think, will be very, very competitive.
All right. And then, holy smokes. So, Sherrard qualifying in 11 events for state from a 2A sectional. Mirko, six events. In Rock Ridge, 3, right? That's a good showing. In the area for...
Well, I guess for Mercer County, it's 5 events, but 2 kids qualified in the same event. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, and that's great representation, and we'll hear from Coach Laura Swanson today, and then Todd Volkert with, winning by a half point this week at the 2A sectional. So impressive for that program, winning another sectional, and then to qualify in 11 different events. Impressive, and congratulations to Rock Ridge. They get 3 kids, all field events, going to state next Thursday. So that's a good showing for the WMJ listing area.
Yep. And then last night, you mentioned it earlier, the Three Rivers had its boys conference track and field meet. Bureau Valley, the champion by 1 point, 81-80 over Kewaunee. I also saw all 4 relays broke the conference record. Morrison won the 4x1, 4x2, and 4x4, and then it was Newman that won the 4x8 to break the conference record there.
Yeah, and I like the media notes. This is a tip of the cap to Rock Ridge High School principal and IHSA board member Katie Hassan. When she sends out the release to everybody basically across the state of Illinois, she includes the media notes from the event, which I think is pretty impressive that they do that, because she doesn't bury the lead, as they say,
right,
in the business. She gives us the headlines, so that's awesome. And then again, the boys track sectionals taking place next week, and we're starting to wind down here in the 2023-2024 high school sports season. Now, also on our program today, we'll visit with Carissa Niehoff, who's the CEO of the National Federation of State High School Associations, of which the Illinois High School Association falls under that umbrella. And they did a survey of 30,000 officials. I mean, what a sample size, 30,000 officials. And it's pretty sad, I mean, in terms of what kind of the survey shows. And there's still a lot, and I think by many people that just take an objective eye and go to a lot of these games, they know it's still an issue. So we have an extended conversation with her about, you know, sportsmanship and, let's face it, to find it as unacceptable behavior. But I do say in my interview with her, now this is just me, the games I've attended, I think I feel better about kind of where high school sports is in terms of, you know, policing the unacceptable behavior. Still stinks and is terrible at the junior high and youth level. There's a long way to go in those area of athletics. So it's always great to have Carissa Niehoff on. She's pretty honest about her assessment, too, so that'll be a good conversation coming up here on Sportsline.
Yeah, it's always sad when you hear stuff like that. Also, one other thing to mention this morning, Augustana's softball season ended yesterday. I think they were 1 game away from getting to the conference championship game. I saw obviously Coach Nelson, former Rock Ridge head coach John Nelson, 26 wins, highest since 2015 for Augie, and their 12 conference wins were the most in 18 years for that program. So he did a pretty nice job in year number 1. So congrats to him. And then also today, good luck to Sherrard grad Kelsey Hutchins competing in the Ohio Valley Conference track and field championships today.
Where's that?
As a part of Western Illinois. I don't know. Eric posted it, though. I just saw it. So good luck to her.
Yeah, awesome, man. I wonder where that venue is at for that. And she originally went to Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
Transferred to, because you wanted to still she had the itch to still compete collegiately. But yeah, with Coach Nelson, I mean, that's the, you know, highest win total since, what'd you say, 2015? And then next year they'll say the highest win total since 2024.
Yeah.
So it's what he used to say, wash, rinse, repeat. But it'll be, you know, so now, you know, kind of back to softball, that's going to be the storyline to me again, you know, following Rock Ridge as they try to win that fourth straight state title in a row. And I think you talk about what they've done this week.
Yeah.
It's been pretty impressive that they're in a good position.
They've put it together at the right time again. And, like, just Wednesday, I mean, watching them, the games with Sherrard were great games, that softball doubleheader, and there were great crowds. And, you know, both teams really, really wanted to win. And just, I think it's a real credit to the Rock Ridge coaching staff. You know, Coach Nelson's gone now, and they have done such a good job. That team is gotten so much better throughout the season, and those, like, young kids have really improved, and they're gonna be a really, really tough out again. And, you know, like Kendra Lewis, like we mentioned earlier, a no-hitter against a West Central, like a top five team in 1A yesterday. So,
well, and they're playing a state tournament this weekend with a level of competition that's in that field. They always do it the right way. They're like, let's amp up and bring these teams in and get us ready for the postseason that begins next week. Now, so it's interesting too, because I saw your tweet about the doubleheader on Wednesday with Rock Ridge and Sherrard, and oh my goodness, to get the ultimate respect.
Yeah.
Well, we're just putting her on seven times, her seven plate appearances. They didn't care what the situation is. Maybe if the bases were loaded, they wouldn't have done that. But it's like, nope, we're just.
Yeah.
She's a free pass.
I mean, it was because the first inning of the first game, she came up with runners at first and second and nobody out, and they walked her intentionally. And then every situation there was, if she was leading off the inning, intentional walker with nobody on and nobody out. Nobody on and one out, intentionally walker. Runner on first base, walker. I mean, she came to the plate seven times and they didn't throw her one pitch the whole day. And I understand the strategy. Because it's like, last year you couldn't do that because of the sheer, I mean, they had like four or five hitters that were a threat to get a home run every time they came up. And then I did like the way Rock Ridge adjusted to that, though, in game two. They switched their lineup and moved Lewis to two and then had Taylor Dietrich hitting behind her. So that way, you know, their second best hitter, basically, who hits over 500 also, Dietrich, was basically going to be batting with a runner on every time. And I think Kendra Lewis ended up scoring the game-winning run in both games, too.
And then Sherrard Baseball, they clinched the track title this week.
Yep.
And they're awaiting their postseason journey. So they'll play the winner of who right
Mercer
now?
Mercer County and Monmouth-Roseville.
Oh, wow.
And then the other side, Rock Ridge, plays Princeton in the play-in game. They played yesterday, actually, and Princeton beat them by a run. They scored two runs in the bottom of the seventh to come back and beat them 5-4. Winner of that game.
That's all Rock Ridge baseball does is play one-run games now.
And then the winner of that game plays Bureau Valley, and the winners would play for the championship on Saturday. Hopefully it's Sherrard and Rock Ridge. I think there's a nice little rivalry brewing there, I think.
Oh, there always has been in baseball. And didn't now, and hopefully Mercer County can pick up a win over Monmouth-Roseville, but didn't Sherrard and Monmouth-Roseville, they had like a one-run game early this season, right?
Yeah, like it was last week.
Like 8-7 or something like that?
I think it was 5-4.
And it always, and I think next week is interesting with baseball because you always look at the kind of the weather forecast and it looks like an active week weather-wise. So that has the potential to impact a lot of things in baseball because it determines who's going to pitch when.
Yes.
And especially if you're talking about it, because Rock Ridge would have to play three games.
They would have to play
to get to
three,
the championship.
The third game would be the championship.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get a rain out here, a rain out there. You know, the alignment of your pitching situation always has a huge impact on who goes on in the postseason.
Yep. I want to, in our last segment today, I want us to each pick a regional champion from the three baseball and softball regionals we'll be covering.
Well, I'll try.
So that's what we're going to do at the very end of the show.
All right, just like my NCAA tournament bracket, I always play the higher seed.
Right. So anyway, Anything else you want to talk about before we end the open and get to Todd Volkert on another?
No, I just it's just amazing how, you know, fast the year flies by. And we know after today, Mercer County officially done with the Lincoln Trail Conference, playing their final two games as a Lincoln Trail Conference member. So I can't remember the first year they entered the LTC, but it's been a good relationship for them.
For Alito, I think it is 18 years, I think, because I looked, and next year when like Mercer County plays Sherrard or Monmouth or whoever, it'll be the first time in 19 years they've played in football. So.
And I'm not sure, so I don't know how many years then Westmer was a member of the LTC. And
I looked that up earlier this school year. It was like the mid-90s, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been a good relationship. And it was nice. When I was at the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association banquet last week, I ran into Jeff Kratzer, a longtime basketball coach and AD at Princeville. And, I mean, this station is we've generated a lot of great relationships over the years with a lot of those Lincoln Trail Conference member schools, that's for sure. And they've always, you know, they have always treated us well when we've been at those venues calling games or whatever. And we'll have to wait and see what the future is for that league. Going to be a little bit changing next year because Bureau Valley's in, right? Is that the only new member coming
it's
in?
It's just a swap, basically. Mercer County to the Three Rivers and then Bureau Valley to the Lincoln Trail. It's like a trade.
Yeah, and then now I don't think any LTC teams, right, are going to eight-man football next year. It's still going to be the same with the number of 11-man teams because they had to make the decision, I think, by January, right? And there haven't been any adjustments there, but we'll wait and see what the future of, well, we let's face it, I mean, all these leagues in this part of the state, it's fluctuation every year, every other year, and that'll continue to be the way with, you know, what the enrollment class of, or what the enrollment situation is at most schools. So,
but yes, we, you know, we're very excited that Mercer County is joining the Three Rivers. There's no secret about that. But like you said, you know, a lot of the people we've been able to meet and work with in the Lincoln Trail have been very upstanding and helpful and great. You know, like you said, we've been able to build a lot of relationships with them. And, you know, the reason we wanted Mercer County in the track isn't because we hate the Lincoln Trail Conference.
No.
It's because it's a better fit, you know, and I'll argue that till the day I die. I mean,
the argument is always for me, it's you default to what the junior high conference affiliation is and how long that's been together. Mercer County / Alito have played those same teams forever at the junior high level.
And those games.
And the youth level and all
and
these sports.
They mean more. And that's not because, like, whatever school in the Lincoln Trail's worse or whatever. It's just because there's not the built-in relationship. The competition, I don't really care about. It just is
It has nothing to do with the competition.
Right.
And the notice is on – here's the notice. On Friday night games, whatever the sport is, you're going to notice what the attendance is at those games when we host local events. And I'm just saying it benefits – the greater business community by having those type of crowds in.
Chabala's excited that the Eagles are going to the track.
That's right. You visit all these establishments because that's what it's always about. They want you. What is it about? You want more people coming to your community.
Right.
So you're going
to
get that.
And they're going to have a nice new gym floor to beckon in the new era, and they're getting the conference banners, which I think will look great too.
Now, do you know? Well, they now I know they don't. Oh, I'm going to make everybody mad now again. Now I know they can't use it for graduation this year, as I poke the bear, right? But can they? Will they be able to use it for some summer stuff? Or are they going to just?
I think it's about done. Honestly, I think they're close to.
But
being
I know they
finished.
They talk about. I forget what the terminology is. They have to let it settle for so many days. Or so many weeks, but I didn't know if they're going to use any be allowed to use any of the floor for the summer because Mercer County's hosting some girls basketball stuff this year. No, they're not.
They did last year. Sherrard has an 8-team summer league in girls basketball this year.
All right, yeah, it's so weird. Like what, 3 weeks? We start playing summer basketball and summer 7-on-7, which is so crazy. But anyway, all right. So Todd Volkert and Laura Swanson coming up.
Lara.
L-A-R-A.
Is it a U? Yeah.
That's right. and Yeah, that's a name that's mispronounced by a lot of people,
by
including
basically
me.
Everybody. Yeah,
Coach Swanson. Todd Volker, and I thought so great this week, and you could see it on demand. So Lily Russell, who is a key contributor to the Sherrard girls track team, is the reigning Mercer County Fair Queen, right? And so it's so funny that she said, I got a lot of kids that are on this track team that are going to be Mercer County Fair Queen contestants next year. And she goes, we do a lot of, in downtown, we do a lot of, like, you know, queen pageant preparation. And she's like, Volker's always, Coach Volker's always saying, what are you doing? And she's like, well, we're doing some, you know, tune up for the queen pageant. But you always, and we see all that here in this area, that kids overlap with a lot of different things. And she's one of those kids that great to see.
So maybe Sherrard can, they'll win the conference and they'll win the sectional and girls track every year, and then they'll have the Fair Queen every year too, maybe. That's what they'll add to the dynasty.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
So anyway, you can listen to that interview, by the way, on demand.
Okay, that we're going to talk to Todd Volkert after this on WRMJ.
Building relationships, supporting the community, and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
The latest styles from the hottest brands. That is 6140 Run in Galesburg. Introducing the latest arrivals at 6140 Run. The Brooks Glycerin 22 and Ghost 16s. The Mizuno Horizon 7s and 25% off Saucony Ride 17s and Triumph 22s. These shoes keep you comfortable every step of the way. Get new kicks at great prices. Available right now at 6140 Run in Galesburg.
When it comes to document imaging technology, it's best to deal with a local company. A local company like Office Specialist. Office Specialist has sharp copier printers, color systems, and network printers, all supported by a local do-whatever-it-takes attitude to satisfy you, the customer. Office Specialist puts you, the customer, in charge, so you can make the document imaging decision that's best for your business. Sharp copier printers from Office Specialist. Visit osi.biz.
And this is Ty Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com talking high school track and field with Sherrard girls track coach Todd Volkert. Sectional champions in Class 2A defeating Geneseo by a half point to win a sectional title. So year number 24 for you as a track and field coach at the high school level at Sherrard. Have you ever seen anything like you saw on Thursday, winning a sectional by a half point?
No, that was a first for me, and it was, you know, I think it's probably the most exciting sectional meet I've ever been a part of. It was just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I saw the great video that you posted as part of the Sherrard girls track page on Facebook. Basically, you know, the kids huddled around each other listening to the PA announcement for the champion. So the Sherrard Tigers announced the Class 2A sectional champions. Can you kind of walk us through what that moment felt like, winning by a half point last night?
Yeah, you know, we were, you know, going through the meet, we thought, you know, as the meet would go on, Geneseo was so strong in the field events, and we thought we'd probably just work our way through. And as the meet went on, we'd pick up points slowly along the way, and that kind of be how it played out. And then we got down to the 200, and we were, shoot, I think 14 and a half points down at that point. And then we're kind of looking at each other like, man, we're going to end up losing this meet by a half a point. And then our two 200 meter runner girls came up huge for us and got 9 points. And all of a sudden we looked at each other and we're like, oh man, we actually might have a chance here. And we, you know, we were slated second in the 4x4. And I was like, oh man, that's a lot of points, big split, because Geneseo's 4x4 is pretty good. And I happened to walk by our 4x4s that are getting ready, and they were talking to each other and explaining what they were going to do and how they were going to do it. And then Lily Russell, my senior, came over, and then she started talking to him about things. And I walked back to my coaches, and I go, I think we're going to win this just by the way they were talking. And then they came out and ran great, and we waited for the official results to come up, and I think we found out about a minute before they started announcing them. So luckily one of the coaches had their phone on, and I said, hey, why don't you record this quick and see what they do? Because they had no idea, so it was fun to watch their excitement.
Yeah, that's a great story. You mentioned there one of your seniors, Lily Russell, wasn't on the 4x400-meter team coming over to talk to those kids. And like we talked about that video I just mentioned, you know, I love it because you have basically all 24 kids huddled around, whether the kids, you know, advanced to state or didn't. It's just a moment of, like, pure joy when it's announced. So I say, Coach Volkert, probably moments like that are why you're still coaching in year number 24, right?
Oh, yeah. This team's been really special. I mean, you know, the kids are just great throughout the years, but this group, for whatever reason, truly gelled together really well. And as soon as they're done with their events, I don't have to tell them what they should be doing. They go to the camp, get rid of their junk, and they're right back by the side of the track just screaming for the girls who are competing. And I noticed a couple weeks ago, the girls had something written on their legs. And I was like, what in the heck? At first, I thought they had a bruise or something. And I was like, oh, that's words. And some of the girls had started writing on their legs for them, not me. And I, you know, I'm just like, what a special group if that's their mentality. And I'm like, they're going to be awfully hard to beat when they're doing it for something bigger than themselves.
So this year, you get bumped up to Class 2A, I believe, Sherrard, the second smallest 2A school in track and field. So you look at some of the schools you competed against at the sectional level last night. I know, you know, some of them double your size, maybe even a school or two triple the size of Sherrard. So what did it mean, you know, the competition you were competing against Thursday to win a sectional championship for the program at the 2A level?
Yeah, I think it means a lot to just, you know, our reputation as a program, that we can get forced into a pretty uncomfortable situation. And at the start, we were, you know, everybody was kind of disappointed because we felt we had a really special team that maybe could have trophied down at state in 1A. And then to get bumped up there, you know, there's some disappointment. And then I was just like, hey, we are where we are. It's time to get to work. And so I started trying to figure out what I needed to do. And I just told the girls, everything we do, we've got to be a little bit better at. And, you know, as the season went on, they just gained confidence. And, you know, it just speaks volumes of, you know, the tradition of our program, and that these girls are willing to do whatever it takes and face the challenges, no matter how daunting.
Yeah, qualified for the state finals in 11 events coming up next weekend. We'll get to that in a moment, but to win a sectional, as you've been talking about, you know, let alone by a half point, you need contributions kind of everywhere down the line. So were there some performances from kids that maybe didn't qualify for the state meet that you thought were kind of the difference in winning the sectional Thursday?
Yeah, that was one of the things that my coaches and I were talking about in the bus back. We're just kind of reflecting, you know, where did these points come from? On paper, before the meet started, if everything would have gone according to the seedings, Geneseo and us would have end up tied at 109 each. You know, and then in reality, as it turns out, it's a half a point separation. So then we're like, okay, where'd the points come from? And our really good runners performed really, really well. And, you know, some of them performed better than on paper. And then we tried to figure, okay, where'd the extra points come from? And, you know, one of the performances that really struck out to me is our little freshman, Mackenzie Locke. She hadn't run the 100-meter dash all year in the open. And I told her, I'm like, hey, I'm putting you in the 100. You're going to be in the slowest heat. I go, you're probably going to win it by a mile. I go, who knows if you get lucky. I go, just go out there and run that thing and give me the best 100-meter dash you've ever run in your life. And she went from the slowest heat by herself, ended up placing sixth in the 100-meter dash for us, which, you know, was four, I think it's three or four points that were just a complete surprise. And then she came back in the 200 and got eighth place and scored another point for us. So that performance was awesome. And I think maybe the coolest thing was that half a point. We could not figure out where it came from. And then we started scrolling through all the results, and our high jumper, Allie Nielsen, she hasn't scored a point in high jump all year. And at sectionals, she clears opening height in her first try and jumps really well for us. And she ends up tying for eighth. And that ends up really being the half point that kind of tipped the scales.
So as we mentioned, 11 qualifying events for the state meet in Charleston, those being Lily Russell in the 100 and the 200, Beth Churchill in the 800, Tori Browning in the 3200, Eliza Dominique in the pole vault, Cammie Anderson in the high jump, Sadie Shemek in the discus, and then all four relay events on to the state finals as well. So what about the performance overall, you know, to send 11 events down to the state meet?
Man, that's crazy. I mean, that's a good number any year, 1A, 2A, whatever, for the program. So, you know, I think for us to be able to do that at the 2A level, it's really just incredible. And if you would have told me this in January, I would have called you a liar. And so I guess it's just a testament to these girls and how they go about their business.
All right, so let's look ahead to Charleston now a little bit for the Sherrard Tigers. For you, as you look kind of down the line next weekend, what are maybe the strongest events you think that you have a chance to bring home a medal in Class 2A track and field?
Yeah, looking ahead, man, the 2A state meet, that is just a different beast. When I started looking at the times from last year and trying to figure out where we fit in this year, but I really think our 4x800 relay has a great shot at making finals and getting a medal. Eliza Dominic in the pole vault, I think, well, I don't know all the sectional results. Going into sectional, she was ranked third in the state in the pole vault. So I think she has a great, great opportunity for herself in that event. And then on the track, man, I think the 4x4 would probably be the other relay I think has a decent chance of making the finals. And then the 4x2, I don't know. I'll never count out those girls, because every time I think we're running as fast as we can run, they find a way to go a little bit faster. So, you know, I think we're looking at maybe 2 to 4 events have a really good shot at medaling.
All right, and just as we wrap up with you here, looking kind of just back at the season, you win another conference championship this year, another sectional title, as we've been talking about, both 4 years in a row. So just overall with the 2024 track and field season, without the state meet taking place yet, of course, just kind of how do you summarize the year? It looks like another successful year, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, it's been a great season, and this is one of those years – you know, I guess as a coach, where at the start of the season, things look kind of bleak and maybe a little bit too much to handle. But as the season progresses and you see the kids adapt to the situation and start understanding what they need to do, it makes you just wonder, do we ever really tap into what our true abilities are? Or do you just, you know, just kind of rise whenever an opportunity comes up? So it's, this is a special year, and this will be one I look back on and think, man, that was definitely one of the better teams I've coached.
Sherrard Girls Track and Field Coach Todd Volker joining us on WRMJ. The Tigers, sectional champions in Class 2A, again defeating second-place Geneseo at the Princeton Sectional by a half point, 123.5 to 123. Coach Volker, congratulations on the sectional championship, and best of luck to you and the kids in Charleston.
Thank you.
And I'm Ty Taylor on WRMJ.
Jimmy is the kind of guy that always parks his car in the garage if he hears there's a chance of hail. You know, cautious. Jimmy had a wife, a new baby, and needed insurance, but said, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But then he found out about return of premium term insurance from Country Financial. After 20 years, you get a tax-free lump sum payment of everything you put in. Jimmy liked that. If that sounds like your kind of country, why don't you call your nearest Country Financial representative for all the details on return of premium insurance. Then relax. And have a piece of cake. Jimmy did.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham. Are you ready to step into style? Look no further than 6140 Run, your go-to destination for the latest in footwear fashion. Right now, 6140 Run has a great selection of Hey Dude shoes. And here's the kicker. You can buy one pair of Hey Dudes and get the second pair 30% off. Hey Dude shoes are the perfect combination of comfort and trendiness. Don't miss out on the chance to upgrade your shoe game. Visit 6140 Run in Galesburg today to get your pair of Hey Dude shoes.
Big box and online stores seem to have it all, but they have great local customer service and support. When they don't see you face-to-face, how much can they really care or even actually help you? Office Specialists at Advanced Business Systems has it all, too. But they have even more. They see you. They'll take good care of you right here where you live and work for office supplies, furniture, promotional products, IT support, printing, mailing, janitorial supplies, and much more. OSI and Advanced Business Systems are your local partners for everything in the workplace. Visit osi.biz or stop in at Office Specialists in Galesburg and Advanced Business Systems Moline.
This is Ty Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com talking with Mercer County girls track and field coach Laura Swanson. Mercer County sends five kids, six events to the state finals in Charleston next week from the 1A Weathersfield sectional. Just a little bit about the performance for your kids who were able to qualify and move on to the state finals.
Yeah, the girls had a great night. Not the most favorable weather conditions. I know Molly didn't high jump as well as she had anticipated, but came away with the win still. We have the 100 hurdles. Molly and Paige both qualified. Freshman Kyla Blazer qualified in triple jump, finishing second. Elena Mitchell, who's a freshman, finished second in the 300 hurdles. So we're taking those five events, like Ty said, to the state track meet and looking forward to a good weekend next weekend.
Well, I'm sure, you know, kind of coaching, I know, especially like the track and field season feels probably pretty long where you start indoor and then you get to the outdoor season here, you know, basically into mid-May. But getting to see, you know, kids kind of accomplish that goal of advancing to the state meet, probably, I assume, pretty cool, you know, every year.
Oh, yeah. The girls have been putting in a lot of work this year. Hurdles, Coach Lauk has been back this year helping out with hurdles a whole bunch and high jump, and just seeing all that hard work pay off, getting to go down to Charleston next weekend. So that's exciting.
And two freshman kids able to advance to state too in Kyla Blazer and Elena Mitchell. How do you think, you know, they just kind of handled, I guess, maybe the added pressure of competing at a high school sectional for the first time and being able to move on?
Yeah, Kyla actually only started triple jumping about a month ago. We had a quad meet where I told them they got to pick an event to try, and she wanted to try the triple jump. And turns out it's an event very fitting for her. So seeing her progress through the last month of that has been fun to watch. And a little bit of pressure going in, ranked second into the sectional yesterday, and she held up her end of the deal on that and jumped a PR on her very last jump. And Elena was ranked second going into the 300 hurdles as well and ran a great race. And the Elmwood girl that was ahead of her helped bring her along in that event. So the pressure was there, but they rose to the challenge.
I think, too, when you just kind of look at, like, the state meet, now I've never, like, been there myself, but it seems like such a fun event that kids get to take part in, you know, when you look at, like, the IHSA sports calendar throughout the year. So what specifically you think kind of makes it a special feel outside of it just being, like, the state finals where you're trying to medal and bring home a medal in the state? Like, what is it you think that makes it such a cool experience?
The venue's pretty awesome. It's a big blue track. The stadium in general, the home side bleachers are big, and it's a little deceiving, I think, when you're down on the track. But, you know, just the atmosphere in general, the PA announcer gets really into it. He announces the events, the mascots of the schools that are competing, and it's a fun atmosphere.
Okay, and then as you look ahead to the state meet next week, any event or events you think maybe got a pretty good chance to bring home a state medal in?
Well, I haven't got to look at all of the sectional results from the state series so far, but Molly has come away with an eighth place medal last year in high jump, so I think she's, you know, wanting a little bit more there. I think our hurdlers are in contention to bring home a medal as well. And Grace Gillespie qualified in pole vault and has been getting better and better each meet and each year that she has done pole vault. And I think, you know, she could do something good there. And Kyla being fresh for triple jump there, she could come away with a PR. And, you know, she's going to have to go another couple feet, but I think that there's a possibility there.
All right, Mercer County Girls Track and Field Coach Laura Swanson joining us. Good luck to you and the kids over in Charleston.
Thank you.
And I'm Ty Taylor on WRMJ.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
The latest styles from the hottest brands. That is 6140 Run in Galesburg. Introducing the latest arrivals at 6140 Run. The Brooks Glycerin 22 and Ghost 16s. The Mizuno Horizon 7s and 25% off Saucony Ride 17s and Triumph 22s. These shoes keep you comfortable every step of the way. Get new kicks at great prices. Available right now at 6140 Run in Galesburg.
When it comes to document imaging technology, it's best to deal with a local company. A local company like Office Specialist. Office Specialist has sharp copier printers, color systems, and network printers, all supported by a local do-whatever-it-takes attitude to satisfy you, the customer. Office Specialist puts you, the customer, in charge, so you can make the document imaging decision that's best for your business. Sharp copier printers from Office Specialist. Visit osi.biz.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Always great to get an audience. I think this is about third or fourth time we've had Dr. Carissa Niehoff on the air with us. She serves as Chief Executive Officer of the National Federation of State High School Associations, of which, of course, the Illinois High School Association falls under that umbrella. So I don't know, Dr. Niehoff, if I'm supposed to be sad about this headline I'm going to read or if I'm supposed to, you know, take a deep reflection in this. Unacceptable behavior at high school sporting events. It's still happening. So how should I react to that headline? Good to have you on again, by the way.
Well, thank you, my friend. Great to be back with you all. And thanks for the great work that you do. I think it is really, it's a reaction that we all kind of have to pause and think hard about. We're trying to call attention to the bad behavior at the same time that we want to celebrate all the amazing behavior and sportsmanship that we see out there. Unfortunately, sometimes those negative headlines take center stage optically and in the media and such. But we're getting tired. We're getting frustrated. And I think some of our administrators and coaches and officials in high schools are also getting frustrated. And certainly the kids are getting frustrated. This work that we do is about the kids, and we really are trying to be a little more edgy and call more attention to the fact that we've got to do better. We have to do better out there. So hence that headline. I appreciate you calling attention to it.
Well, and then you dial down here and I look at the numbers, and this is what is concerning to me. Now, I know I talk to my friends at the Illinois High School Association often, and I know that they've been able to grow the officiating base here in recent years, but it's still a challenge. They still need more. They still lose some officials. But I want to read verbatim here these couple of lines. In a 2023 survey by the National Association of Sports Officials, 35,000-plus officials, now this is a good sample size, who completed the survey, indicated that while 40% of sportsmanship problems are caused by parents, 25% of the behavior issues were attributed to coaches. Not surprisingly, 50% of the survey respondents said coaches were the group most responsible for improving sportsmanship. Now, the other line I'm going to highlight here, this is the one that makes me sad. So in that same survey, 68% of the respondents said sportsmanship is getting worse. 6 years earlier, in a similar survey, 57% indicated behavior was getting worse. So you look 6 years apart. I was hoping there'd be improvement in a survey like this, but Dr. Niehoff, there's not. That's the one thing that really concerns me. And again, the sample size is 35,000 plus officials who completed this thing.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we're disheartened by that as well. When we were all shut down during COVID based on whatever state you're in. I think we all realize, my goodness, our kids need these connections and communities and competition and belonging and adults in their lives, and they need each other. We were hoping that people, the society, would come through this thing and realize we appreciate each other a little bit more, and maybe we need to be more appreciative of these events. And we found that it's become more extreme. And when officials are, and you're right, 35,000, that is a good end size. And these officials, they're not just new to the profession. The average age is about 58 years old. So they've been around and they've watched this for a long time. They're good at their craft. And when they're reporting in their travels that sportsmanship continues to get worse or behavior gets worse, even after we had a time that we couldn't play, that's really concerning. And that's really driven our sort of messaging out there to be stronger, more raw, more direct. And, you know, the enough is enough messaging here. We've got to do better.
And I don't know if you took a deeper dive and looked at how it relates to specific sports. So I guess I'm kind of careful how I ask this. You know, is one sport causing more officiating problems as it relates to fan behavior compared to another? Or do you think it's kind of across the board?
Well, there are three that stand out. One is basketball. And this is anecdotal reporting. I don't have any quantitative, but we hear over and over that, you know, when you're packed in a gym and you can hear just about everything going on the floor. And we've had examples this past week of poor coaching behavior at the professional level, collegiate level. That's what people are seeing. And they say, well, that must be the way we do it. So basketball's up there, soccer is one where there seems to be a culture around complaint and a vocalization of complaint and bad behavior. And baseball is one that's right up there. We're seeing improvements in football and some of the other sports that, if there's not sort of a cultural attachment to vocalization, it's generally sports that are in a facility, in a gym, or on a contained field where it's a play-by-play as opposed to a flow, a closed skill kind of sport, like a baseball or softball. We're not seeing it so much in like swimming or field hockey or things like that. But those are the top sports. And again, football is getting better. Because I think people realize, you know, football's growing and we need to do a good job there to keep officials. So those are some of the leaders there, Jim, that I would say we have to pay attention to first and foremost.
So I know, you know, you've done a good job of bringing some of these parties together. And I think you had an event either last summer or last fall. And, you know, thinking about, well, how does this get better? And I know when you talk to a lot of people that are involved in interscholastic athletics, and when I speak of interscholastic athletics, you know, the definition is the school sport, not the club sport. But maybe you see some of the behavior of club sports bleeding over to interscholastic sports. And I'm not here to throw shade at club sports, because there are certainly some leagues that do it the right way, but we always talk about the exception and the rule. It just takes the exception to ruin it for everybody. And then if that exception gets to the, you know, interscholastic athletics, then you deal with it there. And when I talk to people that are involved in interscholastic athletics, they say, man, we don't want to be involved in policing here, right? But I don't know, Dr. Niehoff. Is it going to take that? So I always think about one thing when, you know, I've have four kids and three of them are done playing. I still have one in school, but I always remember these preseason meetings, right? And, you know, you're supposed to sign this code of conduct, right? Or whatever it is, but then when something happens during the season, what is the penalty? Is it enforced? Knowing that even you as a parent, you sign that code of conduct, and then is the school district following through and saying, no, you signed this code of conduct, you're not going to go to this game, or you're going to be prohibited for a month, for a season, whatever the case may be. I mean, is that one? Do we need to seriously look at that type of stuff now to kind of just put a stop to this?
Yeah, you just nailed sort of the compilation of forces at work here. When kids get involved in youth sports, parents are new to youth sports. There are big programs and they're generally club or parks and rec, but they're out there in their first opportunities, and there isn't a lot of education on coaches that probably start out really well-meaning. They might be volunteers, maybe they're paid. As the programs become more elite, they certainly are, because it's a pay-to-play environment. So I think there grows a sense that, wow, I'm writing my checks, so playing time's important for my child. I've got my chair right alongside the field, and the culture emerges without a lot of supervision, just from, you don't have the human capacity to supervise 60 different fields. Things start to grow like that. And that's where your first officials are cutting their teeth. So that's where they start. And then if there are middle level programs in schools, now the kids are, 11, 12, and they're at a place in their life where they might make a team or not. And if they do, they're starting to think about specialization. And now it starts to be year-round pressure in the family. And again, these are younger officials, newer officials at the middle level. By the time kids cross the threshold of the high school, the sort of parental development culture around the parent role is pretty ingrained in how we behave. Not always the best, but most of our parents are doing a good job. The officials at the high school level are a little more experienced and have a little scar tissue there. And then the coaches, they're under a lot more pressure. They're probably also club coaches. So all of these things at play mean that at the interscholastic level, it's gone from a more formative focus to a performative focus. And that paradigm shift is important. So as we talk about your good point about what do we do to mitigate this, we've got coursework on the NFHS Learning Center that ADs are sharing in those preseason meetings. We have some state associations that have ramped up the penalties for bad behavior at games. But one of the other issues is that the state associations most often don't oversee regular season contests. So state tournaments they've got, but the regular season is left up to the schools, the ADs. So we're trying to provide education for ADs. We're trying to provide resources for parents and coaches and really build the best practices and sharing what are some strategies. And we're seeing an uptick in sort of stringent consequences for people that behave badly. Unfortunately, we see at some of the lower levels, we've seen some of those CYO videos and things like that where it's just terrible. So we're trying to work across organizations from the NFHS to say, in fact, we're targeting an event in August with the youth sport organizations just to get together and say, what can we do collectively to strengthen the message about the importance of, addressing behavior? Because it shouldn't be up to the officials. And that's where that survey, to circle back to your point earlier, officials need coaches to take care of that stuff. So it's not up to them. Let them watch the game and do the game. So we're trying to do a number of things across organizations before kids get to high school. And that culture might already be problematic.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up a couple things and there's so many directions and I really appreciate you coming on in talking with us. Because the other thing I was thinking about, because I want to circle back to this regular season issue about, you know, policing that, because like you said, most associations, state associations, it's just postseason. But, you know, some of these, I was telling you about, you know, these preseason meetings where it's the code of conduct or whatever, whatever school, whatever state you do that. But I was thinking here the other benefit, and some of the programs I've seen do this, like the preseason, maybe meet the team scrimmage or whatever you want to call it, right? They bring in a crew, an officiating crew. And in addition to the parental meeting of, hey, you know, these are the practice times, blah, 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 blah. Here's, you know, the here's two officials or here's one official. And this individual is going to go over the rules changes this year. You know, what the common misconceptions are about rules, those type of things. And then the coaches are involved in that. The parents see that coming into the season. Here's the focus. You put a face, you put a voice on the official. And I think most importantly, you educate that parent. Because, you know, I'll defend, like I said, with coaches and their behavior, I still say that's an exception. But again, that ruins it for everybody's experience. I've heard a lot of coaches say, you know, during the course of a game, over the 35 years I broadcast, having to correct a parent and say, no, that's not a rule. You know, sorry, that's, you know, shut up. That's not, I'm not saying shut up, but it's like, that's not a rule. So to offset some of that, these mandatory meetings, these parent meetings, you know, I think now you really need to look at part of that is an officiating association. They have to be involved at that level in those preseason meetings too. You know, it's sad it has come to that, but I think that's a way to kind of educate, you know, many of these people that come to games. I don't know if you could do that, but I really think that would go a long way in maybe alleviating some of these problems.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic suggestion and truly a best practice. In some states, there, you know, and you have some schools out there that are trying to do everything right, and that is in play. Can give you a statistic on how many, but there are preseason meetings for coaches to attend with officials. Is it a requirement for employment? Not necessarily. But, you know, getting parents in front with officials is a great idea. We publish for a number of sports the 9 misunderstood rules. And it's just fascinating. You know, I'll just jump to one example. People don't realize there's no such rule as over the back in basketball.
Thank you.
No such rule.
I know.
And that's probably the gripe you hear people screaming from the stands, over the back, over the back. No, there's no touch rule. So we published some resources about misunderstood rules, working with the National Association of Sport Officials, and they're tend to be really appreciated resources in schools. I'm not sure how much of that gets into the hands of parents, but we are working on that. We're trying to get it more digitally based so we can get it to people out there in a digital format, so it's on their phone, and try to get it in the hands of the ADs and parents at preseason meetings, working with the NIAAA. But I think that example is best practice. Have an official or two at every preseason meeting.
Yeah. And then, too, when you were talking about, you know, the regular season, and this gets back to, you know, how do you police this thing? And because I always think if you're at a holiday tournament, right, Christmas tournament, you're at the 9 a.m. game on Thursday, whatever, and you get kicked out because you're mad about something, and there's 16 people there, but they kick you out of that tournament, and maybe your school that you're there to watch, they don't have a regular relationship with your school district. So that person that acted that way in an unruly behavior, maybe the word doesn't get back to the local school that this infraction occurred and this person behaved that way. And I, you know, I don't know how you do that with like a clearinghouse. This is, again, for me, the issue is making sure that penalty is enforced if that person acts like, I'm sorry, an idiot somewhere. Mm-hmm. So the clearinghouse, and then I don't know, the uniform policy within the state associations that if this happens here, I'm talking about fan behavior. We know if a coach gets tossed at interscholastic athletic contest, they can't coach the next game. But what is it for unruly fan behavior? It varies from school district to school district. And I'm just saying within each state even. And I just think it would go a long way if there's a clearinghouse, if there's a uniform policy, and if you do this, this is the penalty. I don't know if that ever could be done.
You know, it could be. It depends, again, on the role of the state associations from sort of a mandate authority on regular season. Where, again, and this is where the athletic directors come in as well, as and the school administrators. We would, if it was during the academic day and a student misbehaved, it's very clear what happens with that student on any level of consequence. We need to apply that mindset to our co-curricular, extracurricular activities, what we call the second half of the school day. And if someone is not behaving appropriately, apply consequences. We're starting to see some states that are working with their schools on uniform behavior policies, where it might be a three strike kind of a situation, where if you're out once, you get this penalty. If you're out twice, you get a more extreme one. And then three, you're gone for a year or 2 years or something. That concept is being applied. I think our schools would appreciate the help of our state associations. Our state associations don't necessarily control what happens with schools. So we all, it's going to take a massive village effort here to get around this issue and have some examples out there. We're not going to tolerate this. We're done with this stuff. And here's what happens if you misbehave, and have schools work with each other as peers. Say, wow, it's working over there. We're going to do it here. But it's going to take administration, athletic administration, coaching, officiating, and state association collaboration to get at this on a regular basis throughout a season.
And I just, again, will circle back and say that these preseason meetings, that's, and I'm not talking about every school here, but they have the preseason meeting, they tell you what the penalty is, something happens, the penalty's not enforced. That drives me bananas. And that's one of the huge issues I have in why some of this is continuing to happen, because there's no follow through. And you gotta follow through at the local level. The other thing I was thinking about too, now this is just unscientific by me from the games I follow. I feel that now, and I'm not an official, mind you, so I'm not up close like they are. I feel still at the interscholastic level in Illinois, I think behavior is getting better. Now, I'm talking at the high school level. Now, go ahead, ask me, Jim Taylor, what do you think about it at the junior high youth level? So Dr. Niehoff asked me that question. I say getting absolutely worse. But again, what you see at the youth level or junior high level, unfortunately, that translates into eventually they're going to be at the high school level. So we haven't corrected the problem there. So I still say that's where this all, you know, begins at, is how those fans behave at those youth sporting events and, you know, junior high events. And a lot of times this is too, for me, it's not necessarily like the parent. And I had John Elder, if you know who John Elder created the high school football. I'm giving Dr. Niehoff some education here. John Elder is from Illinois. He helped create the Illinois high school football playoffs in Illinois. Small town, Alexis, Illinois. Yeah, Illinois will celebrate its 50th year of the IHSA high school football playoffs. A great resource. So he's retired, was executive secretary of the Illinois Coaches Association. So that's kind of, you know, his resume. And he was like coach, superintendent, bus driver in a small school district when he started like that. Mm-hmm. So that's his resume. And I remember we had him on one of our Saturday morning programs and talking to him about, you know, what significantly changed for him since, you know, I think he started coaching in the 60s, right? So, okay, so, and he retired maybe in the 90s, something like that. And it was interesting what he said. And he said, you know, when I first started coaching, you know, maybe, and he was a football coach, right? So he'd say, maybe dad, you know, he'd come to the game, you know, so he started coaching in the 60s. You know, a couple of years later, maybe mom had come to the game, right? And then a couple years later, you know, maybe granddad, he'd come to the game. And then, you know, grandma and grandpa, they come to the game. Then aunts and uncles, you know, nieces and nephews. And they're all there for one reason, right? They're all there to watch, you know, that youngster play. And if they feel that youngster is shortchanged, whether it be from the coach or the official, they're going to be mad about it. And that's where I mean, maybe it's not the parent that's causing the problem, but it's somebody, some relative or somebody that's associated with that kid that they're there to watch that kid. And if they feel he's getting shortchanged, you're going to feel my wrath. But anyway, I thought it was interesting that he said that. That's the big change because so many more people that are involved, and I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying so many more people are coming to games to watch that one individual play, and they want to see that one individual have the success. And if things go away from that individual, then they're going to be upset about something. So I thought it was interesting he kind of said that, and I think there's a little truth to be said about that.
Yeah, there really is. Whether the eyes are there in person in the stands or on a device somewhere else, social media opportunity, however somebody might be streaming an event, there is instant reaction, a lot of eyes on these kids. The one thing that hasn't changed is that only 96% of our high school kids will never play in college. That hasn't changed. So there's all of this optic energy on the high school event, and there can be almost a collective kind of mob mentality around what might seem to be wrong or sort of an elevated or misguided sense of what might be next for a young person. We've got NIL energy going on. We've got the transfer portal example at the NCAA that's got everybody distressed and the erosion of the idea of building a program at the collegiate level. And we've got kids identified through the club programming before they get to high school as potential elites. You have a lot of different kinds of eyes and energy on these kids. I spoke with somebody who lives in New Jersey recently. She and her husband have friends with a three-year-old son who has just enrolled in the U4 pre-elite soccer program in New Jersey. And
wait, what age did you say? Three?
Yeah, the young boy is three. Oh, they just enrolled him in the U4 pre-elite soccer program. And this is no shade on those parents, but this is what kids are doing in New Jersey, I guess, at this point. So, and this is no shade on New Jersey, but this is what's happening out there. And the definition of what involvement in sport means, what the purpose of this is not changing the fact that 96% of our high school kids will not play in college. So I think we need to remember that. Whatever you choose to do with your family decisions and financial commitments and whether or not a young person specializes and has fun, or there are only so many seats in college. And out of the college athletes, only 1-3% will ever go pro, depending on the sport. So I think we've lost our perspective on the kind of energy we need to be demonstrating when we're at a high school event. This is it for these kids. We've got to make it positive for them, because they internalize the energy. And we've heard from kids across the country that they don't appreciate when there's screaming and yelling, and they want to get in the car on the ride home and have a nice conversation. So I think we've got to get our pendulum back to center here on what high school sports really is for our kids.
Well, and that's 100% true, what you just said about the kids. They don't like it. But anybody can try and debate me on that, and I'm telling you 100% that kid does not want to see that type of behavior. So this is how I'm going to end it with Dr. Carissa Niehoff, because we're talking about this issue. And what I hear when we dial it all down here, so we've been talking for 29 minutes and 26 seconds. It's basically kind of, you know, as we listen, however you're involved in the equation in this, whether you're a coach, whether you're a student athlete, whether you're a parent, whether you're a grandparent, whether you're an administrator, whether you're a school board member, it's up to me and it's up to you. I mean, really.
That's right.
And you know, I think sometimes even in the situation now where we're in the stands, I'm not going to say during the course of a game where it's a heated moment where somebody's mad about something, maybe you don't approach them there, but you eventually have to have a conversation with them maybe outside of that setting and say, hey, man, that behavior, not good. You gotta tone it down a little bit. I'm just saying those sometimes those are tough conversations, and maybe even internally among families. I know that ain't easy, you know, but you have to have those conversations. I mean, it's those type of conversations, Dr. Niehoff, are probably even more challenging than estate planning conversations. I mean, to tell a family member, you can't act that way, man. I mean, that when I say it's up to me and it's up to you, when I'm speaking to the listener, whatever your capacity is, that's kind of who it's really up to in terms of trying to figure out how we get better and how we sustain or increase these numbers. Because again, when you're talking to 35,000 officials, again, that's the number in this survey, 35,000 officials in this survey, 68% of the respondents said sportsmanship is getting worse. 6 years earlier in a similar survey, 57% was the number. So anyway, that's how I'll leave it, that it's up to us. I appreciate your time, Dr. Niehoff. Any closing thoughts from you today?
I just appreciate the time with you and wish your audience good experiences. And I appreciate your closing thoughts. We choose our behaviors, and those behaviors have impact. And you can't undo what you choose to do. So I hope everybody out there, if you're involved in the roles that you described, bring your best. And the experience will be the best for these kids. So appreciate your time.
Again, great to visit with Dr. Carissa Niehoff. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the National Federation of State High School Associations. You're listening to WRMJ.
Jimmy is the kind of guy that always parks his car in the garage if he hears there's a chance of hail. You know, cautious. Jimmy had a wife, a new baby, and needed insurance, but said, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But then he found out about return of premium term insurance from Country Financial. After 20 years, you get a tax-free lump sum payment of everything you put in. Jimmy liked that. If that sounds like your kind of country, why don't you call your nearest Country Financial representative for all the details on return of premium insurance. Then relax. And have a piece of cake. Jimmy did.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Are you ready to step into style? Look no further than 6140 Run, your go-to destination for the latest in footwear fashion. Right now, 6140 Run has a great selection of Hey Dude shoes. And here's the kicker. You can buy one pair of Hey Dudes and get the second pair 30% off. Hey Dude shoes are the perfect combination of comfort and trendiness. Don't miss out on the chance to upgrade your shoe game. Visit 6140 Run in Galesburg today to get your pair of Hey Dude shoes.
Big box and online stores seem to have it all, but they have great local customer service and support. When they don't see you face-to-face, how much can they really care or even actually help you? Office Specialist at Advanced Business Systems has it all, too. But they have even more. They see you. They'll take good care of you right here where you live and work for office supplies, furniture, promotional products, IT support, printing, mailing, janitorial supplies, and much more. OSI and Advanced Business Systems are your local partners for everything in the workplace. Visit osi.biz or stop in at Office Specialists in Galesburg and Advanced Business Systems Moline.
Jim Taylor, Ty Taylor back on the WRMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. Stick around, we have some remotes coming up at Skinner Landscaping. All right, so we're picking the local baseball regional and softball regionals as we wrap up. Alex Johnson, by the way, still mad at me at the... Where was he mad at me?
Yeah, I was mad at you, too, because you made a complete mockery of my exercise when I asked you to do the seating, and then you said I'm only seating Mercer County number 2 because I live in Aledo. And I'm like, well, that's not really a factor in what the seating's going to be.
All right, so anyway. So we didn't do the seating, but we're picking regional winners at our local teams where they're
start
playing.
With baseball.
All right, so Princeton Regional, I have the top seed Sherrard Tigers defeating the Rockridge Rockets in a real barn burner over in Princeton next Saturday. Tigers 4, Rockets 2.
I have the same matchup, but I have Sherrard 4, Rockridge 1.
All right.
I think the Rockets are going to make a run to the championship game. They've been pitching well.
There'll be some high drama.
And they'll be geared up for that one for sure. So will Sherrard, though.
All right. So the Rockridge Softball Regional, Rockets against everyone.
Right.
I got Rockets 5, Eagles 1 in the regional championship game.
I have Rockridge 7, Mercer County 2.
All right. And then the Riverdale Regional, which Sherrard is over there. I'm taking the Tigers there. But this is a real toss-up in this regional because I think basically any team in that regional field can win. I mean, it's really
I think
true
so,
there
too.
With the comparative scores. I got Sherrard beating the host Riverdale Rams by a final of 5-3 next Friday afternoon.
I have the same matchup. We have the same matchups in all three. I have Sherrard beating Riverdale 7-6 in a classic regional championship game that goes extra innings.
All right, get out and support the game. Hopefully weather cooperates. There should be a lot of good games in baseball and softball around the area. Next week, good luck to our local kids competing at the state track meet starting next Thursday at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. I know the boys track sectionals taking place this next week, and our postseason baseball coverage, we'll have both baseball and softball next week, but it starts Monday with Mercer County playing at Sunny Lane Field against the Monmouth Roseville Titans.
Yep, and then Tuesday, Sherrard softball against an opponent to be determined. Wednesday, Mercer County softball against Brimfield Elmwood. And then Friday and Saturday, depending on what the matchups are, we'll have hopefully a pair of regional championship games. Hopefully we have 3 regional championship broadcasts this weekend.
All right, and that'll do it for Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WRMJ Sports.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ. Today's program has been brought to you by 6140 Run in Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude Shoes and Birkenstock Sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine Work Boots, Office Specialists in Galesburg, Advanced Business Systems in Moline, your headquarters for office supplies, computer sales and service, phone systems, sharp copiers, promotional materials, and more. And by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business. The proceeding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice in Western Illinois.